Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd on the Double with the Double S Express.
So you want to play with magic? Boy, you should know what you're falling for. Baby, do you dare to do this? Cause I'm coming at you like a dark horse.
Welcome to show 118 of On the Double S Express. Sean, welcome. Sean Boyd. Another busy week in the sports world, Sean.
Man, what a great intro. So you want to play with magic. And my goodness, you know, when you're talking about magic, we're talking about the NFL season, Sean Wally. And I want to get right to it and bring in our guest, our moderator for the first 10 minutes of the show. And that is none other than Fu Man from Lakewood, the 253.
What's up, fellas?
What's going on, man? How you doing?
Hey, just blessed to be above ground, man. I'm happy, happy. Another day in the NFL. We'll start off with the quick stuff. Of course, Tom Brady, the judge, has made a decision, but he doesn't want to share it with anybody, so we'll discuss that a little bit more next week. But first big news that we'll talk about, Tyrod Taylor being named the starting quarterback in Buffalo over highly touted E.J. Manuel and journeyman Matt Castle. What do you guys think?
Whoa. So we've got Tyrod Taylor becoming the guy for Rex Ryan and the Buffalo Bills. My goodness. I'm glad that Rex has made a decision. I believe that Tyrod for the preseason is like 24 or 31 for like 240 yards. No touchdowns, though. But he's had a pretty good preseason. I think it's a good move. I think last year, you know, they thought that E.J. Manuel would be the guy. And then, of course, Matt Castle, you know, who's been a great journeyman, you know, coming over from New England, you know, who's a solid quarterback. But, you know, Tyrod can run. And when you're talking about somebody from Virginia Tech, you know, that surpassed all of Michael Vick's numbers, and of course Rex is familiar with that Michael Vick style, I think it's just fitting. You know, guys, what do you think, Sean?
Well, it just goes to show you, it doesn't matter where you're drafted necessarily, and you have to put up or shut up. And those that don't are finding it harder and harder to get on the field, regardless of their name or what school they went to, or like I said, where they're drafted. And it's great to see that coaches all around the NFL and college as well are putting the best player out there, not necessarily who's better on paper.
And you know, Rex is not that type of guy.
I'm going to tell you one thing. Excuse me, Sean. Okay. Rex, you have to remember, after 2 to 3 years with Sanchez and Mark Sanchez, a young quarterback, a couple years with Geno Smith, young quarterback, I just don't know if he's got the wherewithal to deal with another young quarterback right now. And that being said, interestingly enough, Tyrod Taylor's last start in a football game? Anyone?
Man, it has to go back to Virginia Tech.
The 2011 Orange Bowl against none other than Andrew Luck.
Man, I mean, you know, you talk about putting all your eggs into one basket with Shady McCoy. I mean, you know, and let's face it, guys, we're talking about a running back crew that is banged up right now. McCoy, you know, is banged up. Booby Dixon, who's backing him up, is not up to par just yet. Carlos Williams, and then, you know, Bryce Brown. That's their running back crew. And, you know, I don't know. If you're going to bank on the rookie, I mean, Sean, what do you think? Percy Harvin, is that who we put all our eggs with in this offense? Because they're fairly young all around.
Well, every time you think Buffalo can take that step forward, they end up taking two steps back. And I think this was that year again. People are high on them, think, okay, they can make some noise, especially if Tom Brady's out 4 weeks for the Patriots. And Rex Ryan's in there, new as coach, bringing a new attitude and his great defensive schemes with him. But yeah, they have Percy Harvin, who's already, you know, grabbing the media attention. Sammy Watkins has got some injury issues. So their receiving core, although it could be good or very good, has so many question marks. And now you've got an unproven quarterback you're going to throw out there, that just doesn't add up to a lot of wins in my book.
Yeah, I don't see it either. You know, even though, you know, last year the Buffalo Bills finished second place at 9-7 to New England at 12-4, the actual Super Bowl champions. I know that hates. I hate to say that to all our listeners up there in the Pacific Northwest, but you know, I don't think that Buffalo is heading in the right direction here if they're looking to, you know, contend. Which I, you know, all cases point to Rex Ryan really wanting to contend in this division.
I think the biggest story out of that Buffalo thing, Sean, you mentioned the running back core, Fred Jackson, who Buffalo's been trying to supplant since Marshawn Lynch was there. Marshawn Lynch, C.J. Spiller, and now Shady McCoy, they cut him today in a big day of action along with Seahawks were originally trying to cut Kevin Norwood. They put out a few feelers, and they finally traded last year's draft pick, fourth round out of Alabama, to the Carolina Panthers, who, of course, lost Kelvin Benjamin, the highly touted rookie from last year.
Oh, man. You know, so there are some running backs out there, you know, to where the Bills can actually make themselves better. Hey, you know, there's a running back that was just released in Oakland, in Trent Richardson, so maybe he could find his way over to Buffalo and help that team out.
Hey, at least it won't cost him a first-round pick.
Yeah, exactly. Good riddance, man. Good riddance. So what else is new?
Speaking of first-round picks and Trent Richardson, let's discuss another quarterback named starter in the D.C. area. Washington Redskins coach Jay Gruden under fire. Conversations about him and the owner, Dan Snyder, having differences of opinion. But he names Kirk Cousins the starting quarterback, the fourth-round pick from that draft, as opposed to the number two overall pick, Robert Griffin III, the Heisman Trophy winner.
Again, that's the smart move. Just like I was saying earlier that, you know, guys are starting to get jobs that deserve it versus guys that have the big name or are the early draft pick. RG3 has done what for himself to help himself and prove that he is the leader of that team?
Well, you know,
exactly. Nothing.
Hold on. Hold on just a second. So you're saying that RG3 has done nothing. Now, keep in mind his first year that you'd mentioned that he was the rookie of the year, and he only fell prey to the best defense in the NFL in the NFC Championship game, which wasn't his fault. I mean, after that injury, he wound up, you know, it was tough for him to bounce back, but you can't say that he hasn't earned his due in trying to get back from injury. Now, if you want to move forward, which obviously Jay Gruden wants to move forward in this whole thing, and I get it. I understand. Maybe RG3, you know, isn't the type of quarterback that he's looking for, and that's what we're starting to see here. But, you know, for Cousins to get this job the way he's getting it, I just think that, you know, RG3, you know, it's been nice in D.C. Actually, it hasn't been nice for him. He's going to have to look for another team because the relationship between he and Dan Snyder doesn't mean anything. You know, Jay Gruden is put his foot down, and I don't see RG3 being with this team after this year.
And that's
especially
pretty much
when there's rumors that
football for this
he
week.
Was looking to trade him too.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, the relationship has soured since the beginning, and you know, RG3 hasn't done himself any favors as far as, you know, being that boisterous, braggadocious, actually I'll call it confident quarterback that, you know, I don't think the nation's capital was actually looking for. You know, there even though there's a lot of hot air that's being blown in the nation's capital, but you know, there has to be some results that come about, and RG3 hasn't done that, but that doesn't mean that he can't do that. And I just think that another team will allow him to reestablish himself, do what he does best, which is being a mobile quarterback instead of trying to be a pocket passer, and you know, maybe some good results will come about.
One interesting note to keep in mind, the Redskins, obviously right now RG3 is on concussion protocol from the injury a few weeks ago, but the Redskins have to pay RG3 $16 million next year if he was to get hurt anytime this season. So let's say he doesn't come back from this concussion protocol and is injured for the entire season. They got to pay him next year. So a lot of people have already said they're taking him off the shelf, taking out any chance of him getting injured. If there's a chance to trade him and get any value, they will. Otherwise, they're just going to cut him when the time is right so that they can escape from paying that $16 million next year.
Man, Fu, I can't believe that this is about money. I mean, this is business, man. Yeah, I mean, yeah, you know, you mean Dan Snyder wants to save a couple of million and you know, and risk not losing anything? I mean, my goodness, man, it's amazing, you know. And so we've seen the last of RG3, barring that Cousins doesn't get injured. And even then, I believe that RG3 is been dropped to third string. So, you know, it's just one of those things. We thought that it was going to be great. The Seahawks have once again ruined another quarterback. You know, it started out with Tony Romo, and that was the start of Seattle doing some great things. And now RG3, but, you know, I think he'll be able to bounce back. He's a good enough athlete to do so.
Baseball's in its closing stretch. Dog days of August, almost to September. Playoff runs coming. I think the big teams that are making a lot of noise, obviously, Toronto in the American League, Chicago Cubs in the National League. You guys have any favorites for this year's World Series?
Well, I know for Sean, we can actually X out the Mariners right now. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe Sean still thinks that there's a chance. I think they're eight games out from Texas with the wild card spot. I mean, there's still a shot, Sean Wally. But, you know, I'm liking this whole Yankee thing right now. I mean, these guys are starting to generate and get some things going. As much as it pains me to give credit to A-Rod, I mean, these guys are playing some fabulous baseball right now, as is Toronto. But if I'm looking for a team to actually win this thing, I mean, gosh, man, Toronto is playing awesome, awesome baseball.
Is the final slap in the face of Major League Baseball with the human growth hormone and steroids, you know, Barry Bonds' case, his appeal was denied a couple weeks ago, so he's clear and done. He's no longer in trouble. Is A-Rod going to be the MVP of this year's World Series after being snubbed in the All-Star game?
What do you think, Sean Wally?
Man, that's definitely a Mariners nightmare. But Sean Boyd, I think on a bigger scale, you're a huge Raider fan. Now you're liking the Yankees. What are you, just Darth Vader through and through?
Hey, man, I've always been a Raider through and through. But this whole Yankee thing, I'm just saying right now that they're playing good. I'm not saying they're my favorite team. I'm just saying they're playing good baseball. I got to give them credit.
I'm going to tell you guys this. If you guys need to have a bit of laughter and joy and just pure good humor in your life for a few minutes, go online and look up Darth Vader Samuel L. Jackson, and you will be pleased beyond imagination.
Well, that sounds good, man. Well, Fu Man, thank you for blessing us with your presence once again with some of the tough topics and things going on around the world of sports. Be sure to tune in every Monday at 7 p.m. at the top of the hour to where we will have Fu Man on, and he'll be giving us some of these hard, difficult questions. Man, thanks for being on, and we'll talk to you soon, man.
Appreciate the love, guys. Appreciate the love a lot. Bless you both, Sean and Sean. And keep an eye out for Serena Williams, Flushing Meadows, winning that slam. Peace, y'all.
Nice. There goes John, a.k.a. Fu Man, from the 253. Again, giving us the tough questions, Sean Wally. Whew. Man, we're off to a great start, wouldn't you say?
And John, with a perfect segue to our big-time guest tonight, let's go out to the East Coast one more time, Flushing Meadows, New York, and hook up with Dave Worsley reporting on the U.S. Open tennis style. Dave, thanks for holding on. We're a few minutes late tonight, but we appreciate your time.
No worries, guys. Good to be on the show.
Now, Dave, of course, there are some things going on. We just talked about the U.S. Open, and I'm sure that you are following that right now. Help us here in the United States. Who are some of the key U.S. players that we should look for in men's singles, men's and women's singles?
Oh, okay. Well, in the women's singles, of course, you got Serena Williams, and of course, her sister Venus went through today as well, although she did have a tough tussle. And in theory, they are going to meet in the quarterfinals if things keep on going the way they are. But Serena Williams just blitzing her Russian opponent, who then pulled out halfway through. So a bit of a non-match there for Serena Williams. But, of course, she is going for the Grand Slam. That is winning all four majors in the whole calendar year. And there's only been five other people in the world who have ever done that, going back to the 30s. We had Rod Laver in the men's in the 60s doing it twice. And the last woman to win that, well, that was Steffi Graf in 1988. So Serena's got a history. Well, she's gunning for it, and I think she's going to get it as well.
How great a tennis is Serena playing right now in your perspective?
She really has no opponents left in this tournament aside from herself. Yes, she's going to have nice players coming up against her and all that sort of thing, but really the only person that can beat her is herself, being perhaps a little too relaxed or not concentrating in the next couple of rounds, maybe against Sloane Stephens in the third round, the other American player. That could be a tough one. Sloane Stephens has beaten her in the past, the Australian Open a couple of years ago. That will be a tough match, but generally from the quarterfinals on, quarters, semis, and finals, she doesn't lose. In fact, the last time she lost in quarters or semis or finals was probably about 4 years ago, something like that anyway, a long time ago. So she sometimes loses, like last year, in the early rounds when she hasn't quite got her mojo going. She isn't quite into her rhythm. That's when she sometimes loses, because she isn't quite concentrating. But when she gets to the later stages of the tournament, including this one, which she won last year, she hardly ever loses.
Dave, where do you rank Serena all time? You've been around tennis for many, many years and worked upwards of 30, 35 Grand Slams in your illustrious career. You've seen a lot of tennis players. Where does Serena rank?
Well, she ranks right up. And I should actually say that Serena won't play Sloane Stephens, because she lost to another American, Coco Vandeweghe. So she'll come up against a good American player at some stage anyway, but it won't be Sloane Stephens. So, oops, not a bummer on that one. But, yeah, she rates right up there. I mean, you know, if you're talking about where Serena rates compared to, say, Steffi Graf, well, different era, different types of players they're up against. You know, people sort of say that maybe Serena doesn't have many people up against her, many good opponents up against her at the moment. But she started when Steffi was finishing. She was around when, you know, Monica Seles was still playing. She had Kim Clijsters, Justine Henin, and Lindsay Davenport. So she's lasted longer. And in many ways, we felt that she was going to actually fall away early on, because, you know, she looked disinterested at one stage, or maybe 6 years ago. Now she's back. She's in her 30s, and she's really into it again. She wants to win this Grand Slam.
Dave, of course, the U.S. Open just getting underway today in Flushing Meadows. What is a typical day like for you? You're there covering the Open for radio stations back in New Zealand and Australia. So what does a day look like for you?
Generally, it's a late night, although tonight won't be too bad, although Rafael Nadal does take a little while to finish even a quick match. He seems to take a long time finishing off a straight sets match. But you can be here for quite a while. Number one match, James Black, the American player, up against Leighton Hewitt. I think I left here at about 4:30 in the morning. That was not a popular match. I was not very happy with either of them. I didn't care who won or lost. I just felt they needed to get off the court and then do their press conference as quickly as possible. The key thing is, people say, oh, well, you know, maybe a match is finished quickly. And they forget that you have to wait around for the players to actually come into the press conference so you can actually record them or write up something about them as well. So at times it does drag on into a long day, and there's certainly a bit of pomp and ceremony every night, singing of songs and things like that at the U.S. Open in New York. People seem to like that sort of showbiz stuff, whereas generally when you're there as a journalist, you just want them to hurry up and play the match.
Dave Worsley, New Zealand-born Dave Worsley, and broadcaster, PR guy, media manager, joining us here on The Double with the Double S Express. Dave, I want to shift gears a little bit and talk about the Australian national rugby team, the All Blacks that you work with. Here in Northern California, there is a big excitement in San Francisco, and that is from none other than one of the rugby players over in Australia, Jared Hayne, that is trying to make the team with the San Francisco 49ers. Hey, this guy looks like the real deal. I don't know if you're keeping up with him, but he's doing a great job over here with American football.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, let me just clear a couple of things up. The New Zealand team is called the All Blacks, and the Australian rugby team is called the Wallabies. Do you know what a wallaby is?
No, you know what? Educate me with that, because I've heard that term before.
Okay, yeah. Well, you got a kangaroo, right? And you got a kangaroo can be like a big red, and they can be up to about 8 feet tall. And I think Wally there might have seen one when he was in Australia with me. But they're pretty big, whereas a wallaby is a smaller version. And for some reason, which I've never quite figured out, the Australian rugby team is called the Wallabies. So they're the Wallabies, and the New Zealand rugby team, well, they are the All Blacks. And they're dressed in black, and they're the world champions, and they generally beat up on the Wallabies.
And so, again, with Jarryd Hayne, what type of a player? It sounds like he was the Michael Jordan of, you know, of Australian football. And so he's coming over here, and he's making it look easy. He's making it look easy playing NFL.
And well, so what he was doing, he gave up a contract that was worth quite a reasonable amount of money in Australia to actually go, I guess, free agent and try a sport which he'd never played before. That takes a lot of guts. You know, so what he's done is something that, you know, why would you give up a big contract to go and chase your dream with no reliability that you'll actually make it work? Because not many people have done it from Australia or New Zealand. There's David Dixon, actually, and Ricky Ellison from New Zealand. One of them, I think, played for the 49ers, Dixon or Ellison, I can't remember, in the past. And there's a few Australians, mainly kicking guys, who have done it. But Jarryd Hayne, so far, has looked pretty good. Although I've got to say, watching him play, the rest of his team gave him the opportunity to look good. He's a very good runner with the ball. But, you know, he had some great defense around him that actually helped him go through. So it was a team effort in all of those, but he's certainly a very good runner. Probably he's quick. But he's not as quick as some of the American players who, you know, will run the 100 meters, 100 yards in, you know, under 10 seconds. Whereas Hayne is a bit more, he's got a great swerve, he's got a great step, and he is going, what he is doing is going nuts in Australia. People are just wanting to watch American football, the preseason, because of Jarryd Hayne.
Yeah, you know, and he's doing some awesome things. I mean, it's an unorthodox style because he runs upright, but he's very strong, and he hits the hole hard, and he does some awesome things. Let me ask you, Australian ruled football, is it easier to play with pads or without? I mean, it looks like he feels more comfortable with having pads on.
Well, look, you don't play it in rugby or rugby league, and also Australian rules, there's three different types. You wear no pads. So for me, I've got a broken shoulder for playing rugby. The only thing I wore was a mouth guard. That's all you wear. And so when you wear all the pads that NFL players have, it's almost too difficult to move. You're thinking, I can't get the flexibility, the small movements that you could without any pads. Sure, it hurts a lot when someone who's, you know, 300 pounds hits you pretty hard. But they're used to running without pads. They're used to tackling without pads. So it's something that I guess takes years to get used to, of having your movements restricted a little bit. One time I tried on NFL gear, and it's weird. You just feel like you're wearing, armor or something like that, that you can't move properly. And that's what he'll be feeling. But he's got such great movement and different type of movement to your running backs and players like that.
Dave Worsley joining us here on The Double. Now, Dave, you've covered sporting events all over the globe, from obviously U.S. Open tennis that you're at. You've covered golf. You've covered, worked with different basketball teams, leagues, and, of course, the All Blacks that we've talked about. What's your favorite event to work?
Ooh, actually, that's a tough one. I mean, you know, I enjoy tennis. I got to say, one of the things I really enjoyed was the World Junior Basketball Champs in, I think, 2008, 2009. It was in my home city in Auckland, but it was just really interesting. The USA team, they won it that year. It was one of the Curry boys was in it. Maybe it must have been Stephen Curry. I'm just trying to think. You know, obviously, from a family that was so well-known in basketball, and so far, of course, this season his brother did so well. That was a great event to be around. Croatia had a couple of our players that straight away went into the NBA not long after. One Canadian did as well. And I just felt short. I'm 6 foot tall, but it was just kind of funny. Around a whole lot of 17, 18-year-old players who were all 7 foot tall. I enjoyed that for something a little bit different. The Iranian team came down, and the Iranian team, they were, you know, had some big, tall guys, but maybe they weren't so good at it. But that was a lot of fun being around those guys. I kind of enjoyed that. Also, the Paralympics. The Paralympics in Beijing in 2008, that was amazing. 90,000 people in the stadium. And unfortunately, the lead star of that whole event, well, he's in prison now for being a murderer, a South African player, a South African runner. That was an amazing event, being in China with 90,000 people in the stadium and watching people with no arms run, or people who are blind run around the track at the Paralympics in 2008. So then maybe that one probably comes up as my favorite event, because it was just something so crazy, so different. And I also now know, don't wave at a blind runner because they cannot see you.
Dave Worsley bringing
that was one of my lessons I learned.
Bringing great knowledge. And it seems like, Dave, with the World Junior Basketball Championships and the Paralympics, that maybe there's still a bit of purity in it, because there's not millions of dollars involved in terms of the athletes getting paid.
Actually, you know what? That's probably what made it so good. When you think about it, sure, I'm here at the tennis, and I love dealing with some of these players and watching them up close, and I've had a lot to do with some of them. But with some of those other events, like the Paralympics, there really wasn't the money in it then. And maybe a little bit more over these last few years, but maybe that's what makes it so good, is when you can actually see it, and money isn't the biggest thing at that time.
Now, Dave, one of the other things that you've done as far as some of the different backgrounds and crafts that you have had, you've also worked in music. And so you had a radio show, I believe it was called Love Songs, man. How did you like that?
it was pretty funny. I can tell you that was pretty funny, because it was a nationwide show, and a producer and an announcer of it, and of Love Songs to Midnight. And it was pretty funny, because I was working in sport during the day, and then had to do Love Songs to Midnight. Call me with your love dedication.
And yeah, that's an awesome voice.
Yeah. The trouble is, I don't actually have to put it on that much. You know, it's kind of natural. And I think, oh my God, here I am, a sports guy, and I actually have to do that sort of show. And it was during the mid 90s when Boys to Men, Celine Dion, and Mariah Carey were big, and I couldn't stand any of them.
So it was torture, basically, for you to actually do this show. Oh my goodness.
Well, if you can imagine that, you get lonely women ringing up who were just wanting to put a dedication across to someone, you know, and you get them, you know, their name was Sharon. Hi, it's Sharon here. I'd like to put a dedication out to Darren. And you're just like, oh my God, why am I doing this? It was something a little different.
Man, well, gosh, I don't know, man. Lonely ladies calling in and asking for song dedications doesn't seem like a bad gig.
we didn't have video phones then, so maybe it was a good thing. I don't know, because some of them didn't sound that great in voices. So I was thinking that perhaps if their voice was like that, then their face was probably going to be like that as well.
Well, Sean, I can tell you from experience that Dave Worsley has a lot of friends all over the globe. So maybe Love Songs at Midnight might have had something to do with that.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Obviously, having spent a bit of time touring with Wally there around New Zealand and a little bit in Australia as well. That was always highly amusing.
So Dave, what was it like, actually? You'd mentioned, you know, traveling the globe a little bit with Sean Wally. I mean, you know, what type of person was he as far as on the court and off the court? Are we talking about a night and day type of a deal, or is he just even keel the whole time?
There's a few guys that can make so many comments.
Hey, that's why we have the show, and that's why I ask the tough questions.
Perhaps, Wally, you might want to tell them about your... I think he probably refused to come out with me after a while. That, you know, I think he needed his beauty sleep.
Hey, no, Dave was a great host. He would take us out to awesome dinners and great little cocktail parties. And he would bring...
I ended up with a $600 bar tab.
After wow.
That was not just because of me. Let me be clear. That was the entire, you name it, team, staff, everybody involved. And I think I think Dave here forgot to take his card back earlier than he should have.
Probably because I was drinking so much.
I feel like I'm missing some things here, but only to be a fly on the wall, I guess.
Yeah, I remember that particular night. Oh, my goodness. Yes, anyway, yeah, the tennis is very exciting, isn't it?
So, Dave, getting back to tennis, who do you think can anybody stop Serena Williams on the women's side, and can anybody go out there and give a contest to Rafael Nadal?
Well, Nadal at the moment is cruising through his first-round match against Kodric, the young Croatian kid. But Nadal will probably come up against Novak Djokovic. He's in the same side of the draw there, so I think Djokovic will go through that. In fact, they should play each other in the quarterfinals. So Djokovic, you know, he's the big-time favorite there. He's number one favorite. Then you've got Andy Murray and also Roger Federer and Stan Wawrinka, who are the next three favorites. They're all on the same side of the draw. Prediction is that Djokovic will go through the final and play probably, to my mind, the winner of Federer versus Murray. And I'm looking at Federer there for the moment because Federer is in good form. He defeated Djokovic just recently in Cincinnati, so that's a good win. It's going to be a good final if it is Djokovic against Roger Federer. So there'll be one versus two in the seedings.
Now, Dave, in all the years you've covered tennis, who are some of your all-time favorites that not only you were able to cover, but maybe got to know a little bit behind the scenes?
Yeah, well, then one of those is Federer. Saw him when he was young and still throwing his racket, and then dealing with him a little bit. He's a very funny guy. He's actually got an amazing sense of humor. He's just your ordinary bloke, your ordinary guy. If you saw him walking down the street, you'd sort of, you might not, you know, blink an eyelid and sort of think that is a top athlete. He's a great guy to deal with. Patrick Rafter from Australia was a lot of fun as well. Hilarious, very good athlete. Also, I used to enjoy covering Gabriella Sabatini. She got to carry her bags one time. You know, that really, that's a good thing. I've got to carry a suitcase. But she was always a lot of fun. I think probably, you know, Federer and Patrick Rafter are two of my favorites. And, you know, I used to really enjoy spending time around those guys. Agassi, only dealt with him a little bit. He could be a great guy to some people, and at times he could be an absolute jerk. But that was the way he was. That was just Andre. I guess probably he was going through some issues with a lot of different things that he was doing as well. But Pete Sampras, he was an interesting one. Kind of kept to himself quite a bit. Whereas Jim Courier, you could talk about golf and other sports with him quite a lot. He was really into that. And he was quite a bit of fun. And someone who I've spoken to quite a lot, Martina Navratilova, lovely woman, really lovely woman. She started the whole thing that female athletes could be athletes and that you could do some strength training. You could go and be very fit. And she was probably the person that started that in women's tennis.
Now, Dave, where is the state of tennis right now? Of course, you mentioned some awesome, awesome players of the past. And, of course, you know, there are some good ones, as we've mentioned, Serena before, Djokovic, and Federer. But where is the state of tennis? Is it heading in the right direction? Are people starting to, you know, to migrate around it as they were in, back in the past?
Well, the thing is, around the world, it's in great, you know, it's in pretty good state. It's, you know, it's got some great players. You've got someone from, I guess, Scotland, you know, Andy Murray. You've got Federer from Switzerland. He's popular everywhere. You've got Djokovic from Serbia. So that's Europe is covered. You've got Nadal. So it covers the Spanish world, all of them. In Asia, there's some good players coming through. So that covers that. You've got Kenta Shikori, who's the Japanese player, made the final here last year. United States is the problem. Serena Williams, great, but there's not many men that are really doing the damage. You've got John Isner, all 6'10" of them. He's good, but he's not winning Grand Slams. That's the problem. If Isner came through and made the semifinals, the final, or won this tournament, things would go through the roof in the country here. That's the problem. United States has lost a few tournaments to other countries who have said, hey, you guys, you know, we'll buy it off you. Bang, they buy it off and it never goes back again. So United States is probably the weak point in many ways because its men aren't as strong as they have been in the past. When, you know, you look at, I guess, the 90s when there was Agassi, Sampras, Courier, Chang. That's pretty good, pretty good setup. So those players are gone, and there's really not enough good players coming through in the men's side at the moment. In the women's world, you've got the Williams sisters, and you've got a few good players, Madison Keys, you've got Sloane Stephens, Coco Vandeweghe. They're all coming through, or almost in the top 20, top 30. So they're not too bad. They're not winning Grand Slams. But the problem really is the men. And if there's some good male players from the United States, that would really help racket sales, it'd help tournaments, it would help everything else. But at the moment, I guess John Isner is leading the way, and maybe Jack Sock, but they're just not strong enough to really gain a presence across the whole country.
Dave, in your opinion, do you think it's more that there aren't enough people playing tennis in the U.S., or there's just not that top-tier quality?
Well, it's something that I'm curious about. What is the sport or sports that get the most people playing, not watching, but playing in the U.S.? I'd be really curious to know what that is.
Well, you know, a lot of individuals like to
actually
play basketball. Basketball seems to be a sport that the U.S. kids gravitate to. I mean, of course, football is a sport that everybody loves to watch, but not everybody can play. As far as the national pastime that we call, which is baseball, that's something that is a thing of the past. And so, you know, if there was ever a sport, I would say basketball. And, you know, this is one that's up and coming, but soccer is a sport that is actually growing in the United States.
Yeah. So it's an interesting thing to actually figure, because there's a number of sports that I believe in the United States that aren't, they are spectator sports rather than participation sports. You don't just play a game of NFL. You don't just play a game of American football, really, if you're going to do a proper game. You don't just do that so much. You can go and have a hit in tennis, but keeping a tennis court in the city is expensive. Whereas a basketball hoop can be a little bit smaller. You can just bang up a hoop somewhere and just throw, you know, shoot the ball. Probably doesn't cost as much. Whereas a tennis court, a couple of tennis courts, the upkeep of a tennis court compared to a basketball half court, it's quite expensive. So I guess there's that sort of thing. And I guess that tennis goes through phases of, it's too white collar, or too blue collar. What am I saying? It's too exclusive. It's a little bit white, which is kind of funny because you've got the Williams sisters and you've got Sloan Stevens. You've got Madison Keys, who aren't white. Donald Young as well, ranked a little bit lower. But I don't know. I think there needs to be a little bit more marketing and a bit of understanding and just a bit more openness about where tennis is at. And perhaps some of the tennis clubs around the United States need to be a bit more open themselves as well. People say it's expensive. The rackets themselves don't have to be expensive. You know, you can get a good racket for, I guess probably about $150 US, maybe. So it's not that expensive. Shoes, okay, that's it. That's really all you need. You know, you can wear pretty much any other clothes. You just need the shoes and the racket and somewhere to play. So, I don't know. The USTA has a lot of work to do, but, the US Open certainly gets people interested. And Serena Williams potentially winning the Grand Slam will get people, I think, of the US interested. What dominates in the US, and it's still just, you know, makes me shake my head, is the amount of power that TV has and the amount of power that advertising has. What drives me nuts with the NFL is there's so many ads and so many breaks of play. Well, whereas watching rugby, you're not allowed to have any advertisements in the whole 40 minutes of each half. Halftime, yeah, you can have ads. But 40 minutes, it's go. No ads. Here in the NFL, it's like every minute there has to be a stoppage of play. I'm like, let them play on.
Yeah,
and what's this whole thing about getting a defensive and offensive team on? No, if you're a player, you should be able to defend and attack. No, we've got to bring in the other guys because they're going to be defensive and offensive. No, just stay on and play the damn game.
Hey, Dave, we don't like all those ads and commercials and all those stops and starts either. And it's, hey, unfortunately, the dollar reigns. And until they figure out a way to still get paid and not run those ads, I think they're here to stay.
Look at the theme that we've just all come up with. The theme, the sporting events that I really liked. It wasn't about the dollar. Look what you like. You don't want the ads. So pretty much there needs to be a backlash against that. But you see, what we're all saying is what we really like is the sport. We don't like all the garbage that goes with it.
Amen to that. I mean, you know, all those commercials and everything, especially during the Super Bowl, there are corporations that pay millions and millions and millions of dollars to have 30 seconds to run their ad.
It's all ego.
Yeah, and we grade it. You know, they have us grade the commercials at the end and which one was the best commercial. And, you know, because they know that it brings, you know, women and men and kids to all watch this spectacle. And so, yeah, it is. It's a money grab bag, no doubt.
Yeah, but, you know, that's where the public has to stop grading them and actually has to start watching. You know, if you want to sort of say, hey, we don't mind ads, you know, the commercial's been put in once or twice, but not every minute. You know, so that's where the public actually needs to take some responsibility rather than being lethargic about it. Basically, I remember there was going to be more commercials in rugby and a few other sports down under, and pretty much everybody said, you do that, you're going to lose us. You know, we're going to listen to it on the radio where there'll be no commercials or things like that. And it was just a, hey, public power. I'm like, okay, you know, we're going to lose everybody, so what's the point? So perhaps maybe there's just people being lethargic in the U.S., perhaps, and just saying, hey, you know, what the heck? But perhaps the beauty of sport is when it's played not so much for fun, but when it's played for the spirit of sport and saying, hey, we just want to go out there and play. We want to win, but it's not all about the dollars. Maybe it's gone past that. I don't know.
Now, Dave, what is your international, worldly perspective on the NFL tinkering with possibly putting a team in an international market? Do you think that is something that would thrive?
Yes, for the novelty factor, but it would take 10 years to actually get it to the reliability factor that people go along and actually feel it's their team. The novelty factor for a year or two would be great. But then on year three, depending on where it is, and even if it is in London and England, or I don't know where, I don't know if it would last completely, because people over there have built up in London, they have alliances with their, with clubs, football clubs and soccer clubs that have been with since they were 4 years old. So to put something, yes, you get the internationals, yes, you get the corporates. But the corporate people are all great, but who's going to sit in the stands? Corporates don't like looking at empty stands.
Yep. Dave Orsi back in Flushing Meadows, New York, covering the U.S. Open tennis tournament for New Zealand and Australia Radio. Dave, thanks so much for your time tonight. It was great getting to meet you on the Harlem Globetrotters World Tour in New Zealand and Australia. And follow Dave at Dave L. Worsley on Twitter. Dave, appreciate your time, and you're staying up late back east. But, hey, it's still not late for you. You work well beyond the midnight hour.
Oh, yeah. Then I've got to go out and find a nice bar afterwards as well.
Well, hey, Dave, you're welcome anytime here on The Double Man. Thanks for being on.
No worries, guys. No problem. All right. Have a good one.
There goes Dave Worsley at the U.S. Open tennis style. Day one of the U.S. Open today in Flushing Meadows, New York.
Man, I'm going to have to get together with you and Dave and try to, you know, I want you guys to get a chance to share with us some of the things you guys do on the road. But, man, it sounds so secretive. I guess we'll just keep it the way it is right now.
So what you're saying is you want to be a part of that bar tab.
Hey, man, you know, it sounds interesting, but, you know, if you guys didn't want to share, that's fine. I get it. I understand. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're going to end the show with talking a little bit more of the NFL and possibly a little more Major League Baseball. So keep it locked in. You're listening to the best sports talk on The Double with the Double S Express.
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916- 271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds, and since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pain went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that that went away, and I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400, the safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to andro400.com. andro400.com.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services. Platinum service without the platinum price.
Guys, are you having trouble getting to sleep? Would you like to know the secret to getting a great night's sleep every night? Bruce Feeney discovered this secret. A new, all-natural sleep aid for men. Listen to what he says about it.
Hey, you know, I tried a product recently called Love to Sleep. It was a great product, helped me a lot. It took 3 or 4 days for it to start working in my system, and I fell asleep very quickly and got up rested. And if I got up during the middle of the night, I ended up coming back to bed and fell right back to sleep. I would recommend it to all my friends.
If you, too, would love to get a good night's sleep every night and wake up feeling great in the morning, try Love to Sleep, the new sleep aid for men. Your satisfaction is 100% guaranteed. And because Love to Sleep is all natural, it's completely safe, with no side effects or risk of dependency. Go to lovetosleep.com. That's lovetosleep.com.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally and Sean Boyd.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. Show number 118. Mr. Boyd, we went international with Dave Worsley covering the U.S. Open tennis tournament in Flushing Meadows, New York. We talked about all kinds of great things. NFL, yeah. Rugby, soccer, Australian rules football, Harlem Globetrotters, you name it.
We definitely did go around the world, Sean Wally, and I mean, it was a lot of fun, you know, getting a chance to listen to you and Dave talk, and, you know, I'm looking forward to some of the things that you guys go through off the court when you're ready to share that, of course.
A lot of fun stories from the road, for sure. Dave's a great guy, and he was very gracious and a great promoter and basically host for us in New Zealand and Australia, which he considers both his home.
Well, good, man. I can tell that you're building some solid relationships and, you know, some good connects. So, you know, awesome job. Keep up the great work.
I know, really. Just look at that and think about all the different people I've been able to meet. And here's Dave Worsley, who I meet him initially. He's a promoter for the New Zealand Australia tour. And then I learn he works and covers the U.S. Open tennis tournament. He's covered golf tournaments. He's covered sports all around the globe for radio, for TV, for print. It's amazing.
So what are you saying? We haven't done enough. We have to dig a little bit deeper as far as, you know, some of the other sports and crafts. Actually, by the way, I'm glad that you mentioned that because, you know, we will mention the SWX here, some of the things that you were doing over the past weekend. But before we do that, let's bring in Fu Man from the 253. We've got some things to talk about as far as this weekend is concerned. Of course, the NCAA started this past week. I believe North Dakota played against Montana, and an upset happened in the FCS football.
Go Grizz. Ryan Divish is happy.
Man.
Mariners beat writer for the Seattle Times. Ryan Divish went to Montana, and Montana pulled out the upset over North Dakota.
With like 20 seconds left, it was like a dive into the end zone, and you know, way to start.
Great game. It was a very, very fun to watch game to start off the season, guys.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was something to see. I mean, you know, North Dakota, they're the team to beat every year, and you know, to lose the first game, that's really exciting.
Yeah, what kind of dynasty they got over there? Four or five straight championships, I believe.
Yeah, you know, and it's North Dakota. I mean, think about that. It's North Dakota, and they get some of the...
So you think they're recruiting out of state? Are you saying they're recruiting out of state?
if we looked on their roster, I'm sure there's some California kids, maybe a few Texas kids, you know, some wayward journeymen that find their way into North Dakota, and they have such an awesome, awesome football program over there. You know, it goes without saying, no doubt. But getting to the NCAA Division I, we have the University of Washington going at it. And University of Washington going to Boise State. And, Sean Wally, that is a big game for all people up in Pacific Northwest as far as the first game of the season up there.
Oh, it's a big one that Chris Peterson, you know, he wants to win it for the Huskies, but also because he's going back to where he was for many, many years, leading the Boise State Broncos. And it's funny because he had, you know, his media day, I believe, yesterday, and his comments were, you know what? Blue turf is the same as playing on green turf. It's still turf. The yards are still the same. The field's still the same length. The end zones are still the same. So he tried to downplay that. And, you know, he's really trying to downplay the fact that it's returning to where he spent 8 years coaching. And it hopefully starts a rivalry between the two schools who really don't play that much being in different conferences.
So what do you think, Fu Man? I mean, is this a big game coming up? I mean, you know, I think maybe about 4 or 5 years ago for Boise State, this would be a huge game to start out the beginning of the season to prove that they are that top 10 team, you know. But now, I mean, both teams are kind of heading in the wrong direction. You know, what's going on in Montlake as far as the quarterback situation is concerned?
It'll be a very interesting season. They've got the new kid. They still got, what's the kid's name from Mercer Island that was highly touted in high school? Their biggest thing right now, I think, for the Huskies is just getting on the field, playing together. They've got a lot of shoes to fill from last year, obviously, with Shaq Thompson. help me out here. Hekaya Kalaki. And, of course, Danny Shelton all going to the NFL. Peterson, the cornerback. So their defense in particular has big, big shoes to fill. Boise State, obviously not an easy road trip for anyone in college football. The blue turf, as Sean was mentioning, pulling out his inner Hoosier, you know, all the courts, you know, the size is the same. They're not going up to a Canadian Football League field. So it'll be interesting. I think one thing with Peterson returning to Boise State, I'm sure that he's going to be asked questions about the Baylor football player, Sam Ukwuachu, who was recently sentenced to jail for sexual assault. Just because it's at Boise State, I'm sure that those questions will arise. And that's unfortunate for the team, for the Huskies, but it will probably be addressed at some point.
And, of course, there is another game for the first game in the Pacific Northwest, and that is a contest between the Oregon Ducks and the Eastern Washington Eagles. Of course, Eastern Washington being atop their poll in their in the NCAA Division One AA. And so, Sean Wally, what do you think is going to happen with that game, with the University of Oregon being ranked in the top 10 this year?
Well, it's definitely going to be a nervous time for Vernon Adams, the quarterback now at Oregon, who graduated early from Eastern, left that program where he was setting records left and right in the FCS at Eastern Washington in Cheney. And, you know, you talked about it last week, Sean, that he had a little bit of issue with a final math test and all eyes were on him and his math test. And did he get a good enough grade to be able to graduate and play and be eligible to play at Oregon? And of course, end of the day, everything's fine and dandy, whether he got 100 or a 71, you know, he did well enough to be eligible. And he's a phenomenal athlete, a phenomenal quarterback, and it's his time to show what he can do under the bright lights of the Pac-12, a major conference in the FBS. And it's going to be fun. You know, Eastern's put up, you know, they almost upset the Huskies last year. They upset Oregon State the year previous with Vernon Adams at the helm. But it's a huge daunting task for Eastern to go into Oregon and be able to play with those guys. But we know that Eastern's coach is going to have, and all the coaches across the board, they're going to have those guys ready to play, and they're not going to bow down to anybody.
Yeah, you know, I got to give it up to my Ewu Eagles. I believe that, you know, they will find the quarterback replacement. And, you know, when Vernon Adams, like you said, came up to the University of Washington a couple of years ago, he did some great things. And so this is something that I'm sure he's looking forward to. And we were talking about, you know, colored turf, even though Eastern is heading up to Autzen Stadium. But, man, I think Vernon Adams is going to definitely show out. And he's going to show the country that, you know, the Oregon Ducks made the right choice. What I'm surprised with is that Oregon had made the decision so quick. I mean, normally you would think that, hey, they would play this whole thing out to the end, almost like the Tyrod Taylor thing that we were talking about earlier. But Vernon Adams won that job real quick. And so that means that the Ducks are confident in what he can do. And I believe that he's going to have a real good year.
And, you know, one thing I'd like to say, you know, me being the conspiracy theorist that I am, you know, you're right. He's only been there 2 weeks. And it's interesting. I kind of feel for Jeff Locke, the fourth-year junior that has backed up Marcus Mariota, the reigning Heisman Trophy winner, you know, who's put in years of work. I don't know. Like I said, I'm not down in Oregon. But it just, you know, from the outsider's view, a lot of things make you scratch your head a little bit about how Adams transferred, the testing, and it seems as though, although it was announced Adams had won the job here recently, it seems to me, from an outsider's view, that Adams was given the starting position about 6 months ago.
And how can you not, based on his track record? Look what he's done at Eastern. He's beat FBS, which is major college football teams. And yes, you have to give some credence to the backup at Oregon who's paid his dues and waited in the wings while Marcus Mariota was there lighting the scoreboard up. But at the end of the day, the coaches know they have a pretty good idea what that kid can do. Granted, they haven't seen him under the lights in prime time for a season of action, but they've seen enough from his high school tapes, from practice. He ran spring ball, and they said he did a pretty dang good job. But
yeah,
Vernon Adams is special.
There's no doubt on the field. There's no doubt on the field. I have no question about Vernon Adams' athletic ability. What my question is how much are you going to basically give a kid? This kid didn't pass his math or whatever it was at Eastern Washington. So how much privilege are you going to give this kid when you have kids like Josh Gordon being suspended in the NFL? What good are you doing for this kid? I mean, and like I said, it was a very sticky situation. A couple weeks ago, Bo Baldwin said, you know, we've already moved on. And if he didn't pass the test, you know, I'm sure Mr. Adams didn't want any of this attention, but I would assume that the attention wouldn't have been garnered had he passed his math class when he was going to school at Eastern and being held accountable.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And he didn't. He went on as much as to say that he didn't want that attention. But when you make a transition from Eastern Washington to Oregon and that word was already out, I mean, how could you not ask for that attention? I mean, he kind of confused me when he said that because I'm thinking, man, you're about to head into the big stage, man. And, you know, this coaching staff believes in you. And like you were saying, John, Eastern Washington had already turned the corner. And so he was in a tough situation. So I do have to give it to Vernon Adams with that.
If you know you're going to Oregon, if you know you're transferring to Oregon and the only thing that's based on is you graduating from Eastern with your degree and finishing your math class, you know, it sounds kind of like somebody that, you know you're going to make millions of dollars, but you smoked a bowl. Just food for thought.
Well, you know, as far as preparation is concerned, I guess, we can kind of question that. But as far as acting under pressure, I think he did pretty good. I mean, he passed the test, and now here he is as the starting quarterback for the Oregon Ducks.
And I wish him all the best. Like Sean Wally said, he's a great athlete. I think that he did outplay Jeff Lockie. It's unfortunate for Mr. Lockie. I just, like I said, what exactly are we telling students when we afford them this type of flexibility? Would we do this for all students, for all student athletes, or just because you have a special athletic talent? Because the narrative on that has been written many a time, and it's not pretty, people. Lawrence Phillips. Aaron Hernandez, just saying. And like I said, I'm not taking anything away from Vernon Adams Jr. All I know is he was transferring to Oregon. I heard that back in January, and he failed to complete his math class. That's all I know. I wish him and the Oregon Ducks the best of luck this season.
John Wittig with great words on the Eastern Oregon game coming up this weekend. And we also talked about the UW traveling Huskies to the Boise State Broncos. A couple big games in college football early on here in September. John Wittig, Fu Man, Lakewood, Washington, 253 representing. Thanks for your time tonight.
Hey, man, I appreciate it, guys. And one quick thought, you know, as a cameraman, and Sean Wally, you guys both know, the one interesting video that happened this last week, the World Championships track and field, of course, Usain Bolt, everybody knows, dominated. But he had a little incident, speaking of segues, and maybe you guys can talk a little bit about it. Have a great week. See you guys next week. Make sure you have your fantasy football players ready and your roster set because you already know I'm winning the league. Bye-bye.
Oh, my God.
John, talking about fantasy football, and that's all I did this weekend, pretty much. I have three teams. I had three drafts between one on Friday night that took 4 hours, was a live draft at a restaurant establishment. And then Sunday night, I had two more drafts online, so they went quicker. But, man, Sean, I got to tell you, you'd be proud of me. One of my teams, I have both Amari Cooper and Latavius Murray.
Yeah.
Another of my teams, I believe I was able to get, I got one or the other. I got Cooper or Murray. And then the first team Friday night, I didn't pull the trigger quick enough, and I lost out on both. But the one guy I got that's going to be the sleeper steal of the draft, as we've seen in the preseason, three games, two return touchdowns, Tyler Lockett in Seattle.
Oh, man. You know, I hope that Tyler Lockett, and I've been talking a lot about Jared Hayne and his kickoff return and running back skills, but Tyler Lockett has definitely shown his muster early on here in the NFL. I just hope that he can continue that in the regular season when, you know, teams lock in their 53-man roster. Some of these pretenders are no longer on the field, even though Tyler's done these things against what it looks like some of the starters as far as special teams is concerned. But yeah, I mean, you would get the steal of the draft if this guy continues to do what he's doing.
Well, he's been doing it for 4 years at Kansas State, and now he's shown it twice in three games with the Seahawks that, you know, it appears to be legit and for real.
Well, I would say that you would get a chance to feel comfortable after watching this Thursday when the Oakland Raiders come in to play the Seattle Seahawks. But I don't think that the starters are going to play that much. And so you know, Latavius Murray hasn't played that much in the preseason. Amari Cooper, I don't think they're going to risk him. I mean, he'll probably play one or two series. And, you know, Derek Carr, you know, probably play another series or so. But, yeah, you won't see too much of any of the starters. I'm sure the Seahawks will do the same as they prepare. This is the final week of preseason. And I'm gearing up, man. I'm gearing up for week one that's starting actually late, Sean Wally, September 13, 14 for Sunday and Monday. But we do have a Thursday night game that starts on the 10th of September.
You know, not to throw you under the bus or put you on the spot, but I'm putting you on the spot. I want to know, I've got one question for you, Sean Boyd.
Uh-huh.
Last night, the Oakland Raiders were on Sunday Night Football in Oakland at O.co, the greatest sewage there is. Some of our colleagues were on that crew. Why were you not there?
Man, well, it was a short crew, and which means that whenever it's a preseason, they don't bring everybody out as far as the stats and you know, putting those things together. So you're not going to get, you know, QB under pressure, sacks, hurries, hits, knockdowns, or anything like that, because there's just no need to do that. And so they run a smaller crew. It's NBC. They come through maybe once or twice, you know, in the Bay. And so, yeah, I had to forfeit that one, but no big deal.
And what were your takeaways from the play of your Raiders at O.co last night?
Well, you know, I thought that the defense did an excellent job. You know, if there was ever a blueprint for any of the NFC West to look at as far as how to stop Carson Palmer in that offense, I think the Raiders did an awesome job. They've done an awesome job all preseason, but to hold that team to 3 points, Khalil Mack with 2 sacks, and, you know, the defensive front putting a lot of pressure, there's a big question mark as far as the defensive backs were concerned. But, man, I don't know where that's coming from with 2 interceptions from the defensive back crew. And so the Raiders did an awesome job on defense. The offense is still a work in progress. Like I said before, Latavius Murray didn't play as much. Amari Cooper looked awesome, and he looks like he's going to be a Pro Bowler. There's no doubt. Hopefully he doesn't have to play in the Pro Bowl, if you know what I mean. And, you know, and man.
Wow.
And Derek Carr looked average. He just looked average. And so, you know, that comment before was wishful thinking, no doubt about it. Let's not ride it like I'm thinking that they're Super Bowl. I think that these guys are a great team, and I think they're going to be a lot better than people are expecting, and their stock is rising. So it's not going to be a cakewalk coming into the black hole, and it's not going to be a cakewalk whenever you lace them up and play against the Oakland Raiders this year. So, you know, look for some good football.
Well, hey, you know, you can only look up, because it's been more than a few dark years for Oakland. So it's about time that they get back to respectability and have a shot to knock off some of the so-called elite, not only in the AFC West, but the entire NFL.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it is about time. It's, you know, the Raider Nation that has really, they're always going to stick through their team. We're always going to do that. But to have 12 years of just misery is a testament to the Raider faithful, and it's a testament to just weathering this whole thing out and waiting for the right people to be put in place. Reggie McKenzie's doing an awesome job, and Jack Del Rio has put together an excellent coaching staff, and the players are now in place to do some awesome things. I will say this, though. There was a casualty over the yesterday, and that was Menelik Watson, the great right tackle that they had. He's out for the year with an Achilles problem. And you know, whenever you're trying to solidify your offensive line, that is never good. And so, you know, to lose one of your starting tackles, you know, at the end of preseason, and he's going to be out for the year, that could be something tough. But I believe that the offensive line of the Oakland Raiders is stable and strong. And so I look forward to them not missing a beat and Latavius Murray having a great year because of that offensive line.
So, Sean, my one question for you in Raiderland, how is Malcolm Smith doing in the linebacker core? Former Seattle Seahawks draft pick.
Former Seattle Seahawks draft pick, former MVP. I mean, he fits in perfectly with what Ken Norton Jr. wants. And as a matter of fact, he knows what Ken Norton Jr. wants. And that linebacker core, mark my words, they will resemble what you've seen over the past few years from the Seattle Seahawks and the San Francisco 49ers. You're looking at a linebacker core that flies around to the ball. Malcolm Smith is a big part of that and anchoring that down. And, you know, it is, you know, it's great to see. It's great to see that teams will not be able to run all over us and create big gaping holes. And so, you know, we might see in the first two series what that looks like in Seattle. And, you know, I expect to see, you know, a shutdown first quarter.
And Malcolm Smith, you know, he was a great linebacker and is a great linebacker. And he did good things in Seattle. I mean, look at him. As you said, he's got an MVP trophy from the Super Bowl two seasons ago. But unfortunately, they had Bobby Wagner in front of him in Seattle and still do. And now Bobby Wagner is one of the highest paid linebackers in the league and continues to dominate at the middle linebacker position. Had Malcolm Smith been one of the other linebackers, inside or outside, he'd probably still be a Seahawk. But because his forte was middle linebacker, what do? When you've got an A plus and an A right on top of each other, you can't have them both.
Yeah, and I was going to mention that. I mean, he comes from, you know, a strong linebacker stable in Seattle to where he wasn't the best linebacker. And that says a lot that he can come over to a team like the Oakland Raiders and play a significant role. And, you know, Curtis Lofton, one of the middle linebackers that's come over from the New Orleans Saints, is going to anchor this defense as well. You've got Khalil Mack at linebacker that actually puts his hand in the dirt. And, you know, he looks and likens himself to like a Von Miller from the Denver Broncos who just wreaks havoc all over the place. This is going to be a different team. And I know that, you know, the Raiders have been the doormat of talk, and, you know, it's rightfully so. I mean, my goodness, we kicked the crap out of teams for decades. And so now that we're down, let's make fun of them. But I think this year, you know, this team is going to be a lot different, and it's up to the offense. It's up to Derek Carr to lead this team properly. He didn't do what he was supposed to do, meaning Derek Carr, yesterday as they were driving down. They were up 15-3, I think, in the third quarter, and he throws a pick six, 81 yards to the house. And, you know, you just can't do those things. But I think that's why we play the preseason games, and I think Derek Carr will fix those things because he's a competitor.
Well, Sean, better to get those issues out of the way now than during the regular season. And that's, I guess, why they play the preseason games, not only for guys to win jobs, but, hey, to get the kinks and the wrinkles out. And up here in the Pacific Northwest, the Seattle Seahawks, whom your Raiders play on Thursday evening, they got their first win of the preseason down in San Diego thanks to a 60, yes, I said 60-yard field goal from one Steven Hauschka with about 17 seconds remaining.
Yeah, you know, if the Seahawks could write a book, they should write a book preseason-wise on how to win or lose games by 1 point, because that's what's been going on in their preseason this year. And so, you know, you can't put too much credence if you're a team like the Seattle Seahawks in the preseason. So they're sitting at 1-2 right now. But you're looking at an Oakland Raiders team that's sitting at 1-2. It's a little different because they're trying to get momentum. And so 1-2 is not a good place to be. And so hopefully these guys, meaning the rest of the roster, I believe the roster trimmed down to 70. And then after this week, it will be a 53-man roster. You know, I can tell you right now, the depth of the Oakland Raiders, when you get to the third string, it looks horrific. And that's where things fall apart. And so, you know, some of these guys are trying to make the team, and it should be an interesting game. People who you don't know, but if you like to root for the underdogs, it should be a fun game this Thursday.
So what, let's take this two ways. You take the Raider perspective. What are the Raiders looking to accomplish Thursday night in Seattle? And when you're done, I will take the Seattle angle.
Oh, it's real simple for Oakland. Play mistake-free football. You know, all of the ghosts of the past as far as penalties after penalty after penalty, make sure that you clean that up. Make sure that you're running a sound and proficient offense and playing, you know, real hard-nosed defense. And if they can do those things, which as a coach, we talk about all three phases of the games, offense, defense, and special teams. If they can play mistake-free football for the last game, I think they're moving in the right direction going toward going into the beginning of the season.
All right, mistake-free football in Seattle at CenturyLink. A tough task, but it is preseason, so it's possible. Now, on Seattle's agenda, number one, health. Stay healthy, get out of this game without any major injuries to any starting players, if they even play. And secondly, it's the offensive line. Continue the continuity, continue the guys getting to understand each other, understand what they have to do to protect Russell. Russell is so wise and so mobile and fast that he can get away from a lot of bad situations. But at the same time, the line needs to be able to protect in passing situations. They're pretty decent at run blocking, but at the same time, Lynch hasn't even been in there much. I think he saw 3 carries in San Diego, and that's all he's seen all preseason. So it's going to be interesting to see how they continue to gel, and hopefully they do. Tom Cable from Snohomish back in the day, you know, former Raiders head coach, is one of the best in the business at the offensive line and coaching. So if anybody's going to get them right, he's the guy to do it. And, you know, they're taking a lot of guys from the defense, as we've heard from previous guests on our show, the Aaron Levines, the Bob Steltons, and they're converting these defensive linemen to the offensive side of the ball because of their athleticism and their aggression. And hey, it can work and it has worked, but it still takes time for those guys to be cohesive and gel as one unit.
Yeah, and what we've seen in the preseason, actually, you know, from watching the Seahawks games from here in Northern California, is it is tough to develop a strong offensive line. And Russell Wilson has seen himself on the turf quite a bit because of that. And Tom Cable has his work cut out for him. One of the noticeably missing pieces in that offensive line is Max Unger. And so with Max Unger being gone, what do you do to anchor that offensive line? And how do you keep the defense from pinning their ears back and getting a hand on Russell Wilson?
Well, interesting thing today, when the Seahawks cut down to 75, they got rid of Lemuel Jean-Pierre, who's been around for a few years and was a backup center. So if they're getting rid of him, that means they're pretty happy with the center they have. And oh my gosh, his name is escaping me. I believe his first name is Dean. Somebody out there in Radioland will help me out and they'll shout it out to me. But yeah, it's interesting that they let him go, considering he's got the most experience at center. But it's going to be a work in progress. And, you know, they're really excited about Gilliam, that was a tight end, played at Penn State. And you know what? They took the tight end away from him. And if you remember the NFC Championship game, he was the one that caught the fake field goal touchdown, because he's got good hands, being a former tight end in college. And, you know, they're working him in at guard. So it's really, man, it's tough because the O-line is very important. The trenches are very important, both sides of the ball. And to not really be certain and have that great foundation is a little bit disconcerting. But you also know that you've got beast mode, you've got Russell Wilson, and the coaches to help those players get better every day.
Yeah, and you're talking about the backup center position. I think you're talking about Patrick Lewis, who is, I believe on the depth chart number 2. And so, I mean, he had his third season out of Texas A&M. So, you know, Seattle has the pieces in place, and, you know, they also have that swagger. So, you know, when you do as well as the Seahawks have done, you know, it seems like you'll be able to just have next man up. And so, you know, we'll see what that looks like. You know, last year we thought that, you know, that the Seahawks were down and out in the beginning of the season, and then they wound up rattling off, 10 out of the next 11 games to get themselves in the position to get to the Super Bowl. So, you know, I do believe that, you know, Pete Carroll has a strong group and you know, strong depth in his on his offense. And so, you know, we'll see.
All right, Sean, there is a strong safety in the Pacific Northwest that has not shown his face to the Renton shores of Lake Washington at the VMAC Seahawks headquarters. That is one Cam Chancellor, still has 3 years remaining on his contract. What are your thoughts? Do you think he'll continue the holdout into the season? Do you think he's justified in his stance? Or with 3 years remaining, does the team have leverage?
The team has all the leverage in the world. I mean, if Cam Chancellor wants to sit out, it's going to hurt him. You know, Seattle is going to go after his wallet and let him know that you have to honor your contract. We just re-upped your contract last year, and now because some other people have bigger payouts, you can't just renege on that offer. And if the Seahawks bend on that, oh my goodness, what that's going to do is that's going to open the floodgates. They've already tampered with it once with Marshawn Lynch. They do not want to go down this road, meaning the Seattle Seahawks front office, as far as, you know, trying to appease every player that has discontent with their contract because other ones are getting paid out. This is the problem with football today. You know, with the fans fall in love with such a great team, and they believe when times are good that, oh my goodness, we're going to be doing this year after year. These guys are rookies, and, you know, this guy's only a one-year player. He's going to be around. But I'm telling you, the humanistic part of football always rears its head when people go and get greedy. And Cam Chancellor is doing just that. And if John Snyder says that, we're going to loosen up and give him what he wants, Seattle will be down the drain quicker than we think. So I'm thinking that the front office is going to hunker down and say, no way, we can do without him, and we're going to try to piece this defense together with somebody else.
The 2014 GM of the year in the National Football League was who, Sean Boyd?
Yeah, that was John Snyder.
Exactly, John Snyder in Seattle. He is too smart, and he will not cave because they have a plan and a process that is bigger than one player. I know, Sean, you like to say, do you follow the name on the front or the name on the back of the jersey? Cam right now is sticking to the name on the back of the jersey. Granted, he's making about $4.5 million or scheduled to make that if he ever shows up this season. But, you know, he's seeing Richard Sherman, Bobby Wagner, Russell Wilson get enormous contracts that, you know, in the case of Sherman and Wagner, roughly $10 million a season. Cam's at $4.5 million. Is he one of the top two, three strong safeties in the league? Most definitely.
Well, yeah. Well, all things considered, when there were two interceptions taken to the house last year for the Seattle Seahawks, they were both by Cam Chancellor. So, I mean, this guy has a legitimate beef as far as why he should get the money. Let's not forget Earl Thomas got a nice payout the year before as well. So, you know, it seems like people are getting these payouts, and you know, Cam again showing that humanistic side of, you know, wanting to get paid, but he's going to have to wait his turn, man, because, you know, you have to honor that contract. And if he doesn't, you know, why not trade him? I mean, the Raiders would love to have him. I'm sure Ken Norton Jr. would love to have another of the Legion of Boom in Oakland, and we would love to have you, Cam.
Hey, I mean, Deion Bailey is doing a great job in Cam's absence at strong safety, but there's only one Cam. There's only one Bam Bam. There's only one heavy hitter. There's only one linebacker at strong safety that puts fear in receivers' eyes that a Wes Welker won't go over the middle because there's Cam Chancellor. But he did just sign his contract in 2013. And at the time, he was one of the top paid safeties. And so many people balked at how much money Seattle gave him. And now, a year and a half later, it's not enough. And Cam's underpaid. Wasn't the sentiment in 2013. And you didn't have to sign that contract in 2013, Cam.
Well, we're going to see how tough this defense is without Cam. Because it looks like he and his camp have hunkered down as well. So, you know, the Legion of Boom has touted themselves as having a lot of depth, and we'll see, because Cam Chancellor, when I saw what I saw in the playoffs last year was just a freak of nature. Is this not the guy that was jumping over the offensive line on
to
field
block
goal?
A field
kicks?
Goal? Yes.
I mean, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, yeah. You know. I mean, so again, all of those things considered, those played big roles as far as Seattle winning those games. So when you don't have somebody like that, you know, I mean, we're going to see how tough the Seahawks defense is.
So Sean, what is your prediction? When will Cam Chancellor show his face, or going the complete opposite of the spectrum, any chance they trade him?
Well, you know, I don't think he shows his face because it's not even his decision. You know, the bad part about these players is they act like they don't have a mind of their own, and they allow some knuckleheaded agent, you know, that has no clue on how to actually play the game to dictate what they do and say as far as their happiness is concerned. And so this agent, you know, will definitely say, hey, we're going to sit this one out, man. And, you know, let's just look and see if they're going to trade you, because I believe by if nothing gets done by week two, then they're going to ask for a trade. And, you know, I mean, that's just going to be it.
I am predicting slash hoping slash wishful thinking. Cam shows up Monday, gets enough practice in, he can play week one in St. Louis, because number one, he does not want to miss out on $4.5 million, because $4.5 million is better than zero. Am I right?
Yeah, kind of. You're right. $4.5 okay. million dollars is okay. better than zero, but $8 million will make that zero go away. And so if he can get that type of a contract, he's more than willing to sit out to get twice the money that he feels he should get.
Well, Sean, I'm glad you've already stated in the beginning of this topic that Cam has no leg to stand on. He's got 3 years left on his deal. He was happy as a clam in 2013, had no issue then. Now all of a sudden it's an issue. Well, sorry, you shouldn't have signed the deal. You've got 3 years left. We can't redo your deal. We can't give you more money now because, as you already talked about, Boyd, everybody else, like Michael Bennett, who's apparently unhappy with his contract, and anybody else, oh, well, I'm just not going to show and they'll redo it because I've got 2, 3, 4 years left. No, that's not how it works. The Seattle Seahawks will consider redoing your deal in the final year if you're worth it.
Yeah, you know, but we're talking about the agent. We're talking about Sean Gilbert, this is what he does. And, you know, also being an agent for Drew Brees and backing what Drew Brees did, man, it doesn't look good. It doesn't look good for Seattle, you know, at the strong safety position, even though you're saying, and I do believe you because you follow this team, you know, even though you say Deshaun Sheed is that person. I mean, you know, this kid, I mean, out of Portland State, he's a local kid, you know, so, I mean, you know, he can definitely do the job, but he's not Cam Chancellor.
No, not at all. Nobody's Cam Chancellor, and it's Deion Bailey playing strong safety as the starter. And, yeah, St. Louis, the first game, not the toughest wide receiver group in the league, so they could get by without Cam that day, possibly. But, I mean, St. Louis has that tough defense, the great defensive line, which is going to give Seattle's patchwork Band-Aid offensive line trouble.
Yeah, you know, and so, you know, for Seattle, it's a wait-and-see type of a deal. You know, this has been a great run, and we'll see if they can continue to have this run. I know Earl Thomas is now working out, and so I believe he should be ready, you know, within the first 3 weeks. You have Michael Bennett, as you were explaining, you know, showing a little bit of discontent. But Michael Bennett, I think right now his biggest issue is keeping his mouth shut, having a huge fine coming up, you know, which – I mean, if Fu Man, if you're still listening, man, let's have that as a topic next week, because, you know, I think there are some truths to what Michael Bennett is saying as far as the quarterbacks are concerned. And so, you know, you got Richard Sherman that's trying to heal himself a little bit. So, you know, Seattle has a little bit of resilience that they have to overcome here, especially on the defensive side.
You know, Sean, this may be the longest show in DSX history as we are on show 118 tonight. And we've got a couple more quick points we have not hit on yet. And one is a huge item last Friday. The Seattle Mariners let go general manager Jack Zarenczyk, said thank you for your services, but you haven't won enough games and somebody has to go.
Well, you know, I'm thinking everybody in the Pacific Northwest is saying it's about time. You know, I mean, how much longer can you put up with, you know, this type of play? And I know that it's not the GM's fault. I mean, because if you look at the Seattle Mariners roster, that roster, there's no reason why they don't win 100 games. But for some reason, they haven't. And somebody has to take the fall. And so why not be the GM, for crying out loud? And, you know, it's unfortunate. But, you know, there has to be some type of a shakedown. And that seems to be the one of the most least resistance. And so, you know, I'm saying that, you know, McLemore has one more year. And if this doesn't if it doesn't work next year, he's out of there and they got to start this thing all over again.
I hope you're thinking McClendon.
Ah, I'm sorry. I think I said McLemore.
Because the rapper McLemore is not running the Mariners, but maybe he should.
Man, but yeah. So McClendon definitely has to get this thing going. Otherwise, he will be out as the next casualty.
Well, it's interesting because Lloyd McClendon was given a full vote of confidence from the Mariners ownership and President Kevin Mather, which you can only take with a grain of salt because the new GM will have his say or her say whenever they are hired. And reading between the lines and what Kevin Mather has said on Friday when he was on various Seattle radio shows and Seattle TV stations, that it appears they want to go with somebody who has experience in building a champion and somebody that's been there, done that before, because Zarenczyk really hadn't. He was an assistant in the scouting department with the Brewers when they brought him to Seattle 7 years ago. It's hard to imagine it's been 7 years already. But, you know, they were roughly 90 games under 500 all throughout those 7 years. And is it Jack's fault that Cano hit 240 the first half of the year? Not at all. Is it Jack's fault that the team was one game away from the playoffs last year? Not at all. But as always, you can't fire the entire team and start over. So somebody has to go. And Jack was very gracious and very humble when Kevin Mather met him in Chicago. The Mariners were playing the White Sox. And Jack said, look, I understand. We haven't won enough games. That's on me. My bad, my fault. I understand. And he's been nothing but gracious from day one to all the media. And, you know, Kevin Mather, the new president, new last year, he flat out said, this is unacceptable. We are spending a lot of money on payroll, and payroll may even go up next year. And the fans have come out, $2.5 million for a team that can't even get to 500. So, you know, the big question is, do you blow it up and retool and start from scratch? No, you absolutely do not. When you have Cano, Seager, Felix, Nelson Cruz, who should be MVP of the league, but because the Mariners don't have a good record, he won't be.
Yeah, and you can't forget Iwakuma as well. And so when you're talking about a pitching staff and you're looking to solidify that, let's face it, King Felix was subpar at best this year. And then Iwakuma showing strong inconsistencies as far as his pitching is concerned, having no-nose one game and then giving up crazy amounts of runs the next. And so I think if they can get that right, if those guys go into the offseason, meaning they're starting pitching, it should be a little different, But they're still going to have to try to find some some other pieces to make sure that, you know, they're that team to beat, not only in the AL West, but in the AL period.
And Sean, interesting to note today, they traded away center fielder Austin Jackson. So, and that, exactly, you're laughing. That, to me, that's a head scratcher. I understand Austin has not hit to his Detroit capabilities or as people like to say in the Northwest, to the back of his baseball card, his averages, but he's still a great defender. He's still speedy on the base paths. You get rid of him, who do you have in the outfield?
Yeah, but isn't that what Seattle's known for? This isn't the first time that we've heard this, Austin Jackson being gone. Let's face it, Adam Jones is sitting there in Baltimore. He's just been an all-star ever since he left Seattle, that's all.
Hey, time out. That was Bill Bavasi's worst, stupidest, most ridiculous move in all the land. How he thought that was okay to get rid of Adam Jones for Eric Bedard. I cannot pitch more than five innings ever in my life.
Well, yeah, I mean, but that's what you're dealing with. And it wasn't like Jack didn't, you know, swing for the fences himself. When you're bringing in Cruz, you're bringing in Cano. I mean, this goes all the way back to when Seattle had that, you know, the big aspirations of bringing in Sean Figgins. And that, boy, we know that didn't work out. But it's not like he's not trying to get these home run hitters, you know, so to speak, to come in and play good baseball. It's just when they come to Seattle, it's not working out.
What is it? Is it a hex? Is it a curse? Is it voodoo? I mean, you know, you brought up Sean Figgins, who everybody in Seattle hates, right? Because he couldn't play worth a darn. But when he was in LA/Anaheim before that, he was everybody's five-tool player, speed, hitting for average, getting, you know, doing whatever he could, stealing bases. And he comes to Seattle to die. Adrian Beltre, same thing before him.
Adrian Beltre. I was just getting ready to say Adrian Beltre, playing the hot spot, playing the corner, didn't really do much. He's actually playing well right now that he's left Seattle. I mean, I don't get it. You know, you have a nice stadium up there in Safeco Field in Seattle and, you know, great fans. I just don't know what in the world is going on and why they can't put things together.
Well, I tell you what they have to do in the offseason, whoever the new GM is, they've got to figure out the outfield, especially left field, center field, now that they traded away their center fielder in Austin Jackson. And, you know, find people that not only are speedy and can play defense, kind of like a Mike Cameron and a Ken Griffey Jr., but people that can hit as well. You know, Mike Zunino was sent down to Tacoma on Friday, the final move Jack Zarenzik made before he was let go. It's like the guy's hitting less than 200, but yet he hit 350 in college. How do you go from 350 to I can't hit the broadside of a barn? But anyway, that's a topic for another day. They need to figure that out and get some productive players at first base and the outfield in Seattle, barring right field, which is doing well with Nelson Cruz. Sean, show 118. It's been fun. It's been great. It's been a busy, busy weekend for both of us. Whew. You ready for the NFL preseason to wrap up on Thursday? Of course, all eyes on Seattle, Oakland at Seattle as the NFC West plays the AFC West. And who knows, maybe one day soon the Raiders will be in the NFC West.
Well, maybe, and I'm hoping that they can get this going real soon. So, man, Sean, we didn't get a chance to talk about you know, some of the things that you were doing the past weekend. We'll try to get that stuff in, man, next week, definitely. I mean, you were rocking and rolling, doing some go-kart stuff. We'll use that as a teaser. Man, what is it, show number 119?
118.
Show number 118. And, man, if you would like to...
Longest ever. This is a record setter.
Definitely. And so if you would like to tune into On the Double with the Double S Express live, you can download the app on your smartphones at download the app BBS Radio and then station number 2. If you want to listen to us live on the internet, you'll go to www.bbsradio.com/DSX. Man, Sean, Wally, great show number 118. We had Don Worsley, New Zealand extraordinaire, doing some things with Dave Worsley. I'm sorry. A New Zealand extraordinaire, doing some things with the Harlem Globetrotters, also with rugby. And man, he was talking about world AAU basketball as well, I believe. And so, man, he does a whole bunch of stuff, Sean Wally. It was great
That's right. He's currently working with the U.S. Open Tennis Championships in Flushing Meadows, New York. Dave Worsley has also worked with the World Junior Basketball Championships, and those were some of his greatest memories and funnest times at the World Junior Basketball Championships, as well as the Paralympics.
So, yeah, man, that was an awesome show. And, of course, we kick it off with our moderator in the beginning and at the end of the show, none other than Fu Man from the 253. So show number 118 in the books for Sean Wally up in the Tri-Cities. Sean Boyd down here in Elk Grove, California. Don Newsom in paradise. You've been listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. This has been a DSX LLC production. And remember this. You're not in the game unless you take a shot. And when you take a shot, we hope that it hits nothing but the bottom of the net. This has been a DSX LLC production.
Thanks for listening.
We'll see you next week.
On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for some more great sports talk and big-time guests on the Double with the Double S Express.